Then what happens?
Yeah, well, because we had re-biopsied her bone met to make sure that this was squamous cell, we went ahead and did a genotyping panel on it. Because there had been a couple of genes that had been described in the interval since her diagnosis till now. And I know genotyping squamous cell patients isn't always the standard of care, not always on the guidelines, but she had a relatively low smoking history, and at our center, we often genotype squamous patients as well. And lo and behold, it turned out that she had a MET exon 14 skipping mutation discovered.
And that's why I was asking you when you presented the case about the biopsy and that it was really squamous, because when I saw that she had this exon 14, I'm like, I thought that doesn't happen in squamous.
It can, more so even than we really think EGFR and ALK and ROS, they're very, very concentrated in adeno, and when it does happen in squamous, maybe it's an adenosquamous. But MET exon 14 seems to be one of these driver mutations that does happen in other histologies a little more frequently. Even within adeno, there's a type of adeno that the name is escaping me right now. Let me think. It's a pleomorphic, fetal lung carcinoma. That's the subtype. So even within adenocarcinoma, there's a specific type called fetal lung adenocarcinoma. It's a dedifferentiated adeno form that's not very common, but they are finding that if you see that histology, you really want to test for MET exon 14. And there have been a number of squamous cell patients described. They tend to be older. They tend to, you know, even be in their 70s like this patient.
Wow, that's really interesting, because I think people have really gotten away from any kind of genetic testing in squamous patients. What about BRAF? I know it occurs in smokers. Does it occur in squamous also?
I don't think it does. I haven't seen that. MET exon 14 is one of the ones that is, I think, a little more likely in squamous. It's still predominantly adeno, don't get me wrong, but this is something that's been described in some of the early clinical characteristic type papers.
Fascinating. So this patient had disease progression on GEM. You find this exon 14 change and the patient goes on crizotinib?
Yeah. So we actually found the change, you know, in the middle of while she was still responding well to GEM. And so we told her this is a great backup plan. If the gemcitabine stops working, we'll switch you to a pill. And so we got as much mileage out of the gemcitabine as we could. But when she started progressing, we were able to get her crizotinib. And she had a really nice response to that as well.
Wow. And she's still on crizotinib?
She's not. She ended up being on it about 10 months. And then she progressed. She actually went on a couple of different clinical trials after that of other novel MET inhibitors. And she responded to, I think it was the first two MET inhibitors she received. And then by the third trial, she didn't respond anymore. She unfortunately passed away a few months ago.
Wow, but what an instructive case this is. How did she do on the crizotinib? She felt good?
She did feel good. I mean, her cancer really regressed even further, so she had no cancer-related symptoms. She did develop some lower extremity edema after a few months, and that gradually, slowly got worse over the time that she was on the crizotinib and even progressed to her upper extremities. But it wasn't anything that slowed her down too much. We did have her see a lymphedema specialist who fitted her with some sleeves and some leggings.